Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, I'm Lucas Ann, and thank you for listening to Locked On Clippers. If you like the Locked On Podcast Network and you're interested in joining our team, this may be your chance. The Locked On Podcast Network is hiring a national sales manager. You can be a part of the fastest growing sports podcast network, selling the NBA channel, NFL channel, and the entire network to our national advertisers. If you have the skills, the perseverance, and the game to be a part of the Locked On Podcast Network, email lockedonpodcasts@gmail.com with your resume. That email address again was lockedonpodcasts@gmail.com. Now enjoy the show. Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I am your host, Lucas Han. Today is Monday, July 3rd, 2017, and we are here talking about the opening weekend of NBA free agency, which is, in my opinion, the most exciting weekend of the NBA year. And actually, maybe talking a little bit about how it wasn't as exciting as we've seen in years past. It seems like by July 4th last year, the Clippers had almost all of their main signings done. And it could still happen, but as we head into July 3rd, we still don't, you know, we basically have only had the team keep Blake Griffin and a lot of question marks surrounding the rest of the roster. I think I saw that in the first 48 hours of free agency last year, teams signed deals worth a total of like, they signed like 40 total deals, and now we've seen 28. So that's really a cutback. You know, that's a significant decline in activity. I think it maybe has to do with the fact that teams overspent last year, and we've seen some immediate buyer's remorse on some contracts, especially across the hall with the Lakers and with the Portland Trailblazers, but in other places as well. But so we had a really long episode last week talking about the Chris Paul trade that went over an hour. We had a briefer one on Friday getting ready for free agency. I think today we'll have another nice long episode. I've got a pretty significant, you know, 16-17 minute segment for you guys on what's been going on around the league as far as essentially going through a list of the deals that have been reported so far and just saying what I think, you know, what I think about the direction of the team, the value of the deal, just so that, you know, I know a lot of people reach out to me and they say, I'm a Clippers fan, I get my 30 minutes of Clippers every day from you, but you're talking about other free agents, like, or you're even talking about the Clippers trading for a guy like Patrick Beverley, and I don't really know anything about him, because, you know, not everyone is as crazy into the NBA internet and Twitter as I am, and I totally get that because it's a little much even for me sometimes. And not everyone watches games of other teams. I really compare to a lot of, you know, me, Lucas level people that do other podcasts covering other teams. I don't watch a ton of other NBA basketball, and I'll be the first to admit that. But so I get it, and so I wanted to give you guys a look basically at what's happening so that you don't get freaked out and like spill your drink all over yourself when you're watching the Clippers next year and they play the Timberwolves and Jimmy Butler, Jeff Teague, and Taj Gibson all come out in the starting lineup. So we'll talk a little bit about what's going on, and then I've done a few radio spots over the last few days just with some different stations that want Clippers perspective, NBA perspective, talk about the Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, all that stuff going on. So I'm going to roll you guys about a like 10 to 12 minute bit I did on Fox Sports Radio last night. You may have heard that if you happen to see the link that I tweeted out, but you know, I'm betting that of the people who listen to this episode, probably less than 1% will have actually listened to the show live. So if you heard it, I'm sorry, you can skip ahead through it. But everyone else, I think it is kind of a succinct summary of what's been going on. You know, the guys, they know to ask the questions that people want to hear the answers to, their national audience. And so maybe these are some questions that you want to hear the answer to as well. And then when we come back from that, we will close out the episode just with basically my thoughts on what's going on with the Clippers going forward as far as the wings that they're targeting and filling out the roster. So let's get started already. It's been 5 minutes. Let's talk about these deals around the league. Then we'll roll into that radio interview. Then we'll roll into some hypothetical Clipper talk. First of all, Steph Curry back to the Warriors, max deal. Sean Livingston back to the Warriors, 3 years, $24 million. Andre Iguodala back to the Warriors, 3 years, $45 million. The Warriors stay really, really good. There's nothing especially shocking here. But what's noteworthy is that they've now set themselves up to the point where they can really only keep this team together for two more years. And once we hit the summer of 2019, which I know is still two Warriors championships away from now, they're going to win the 2018 and 2019 championship as it stands currently. But once we hit that summer of 2019, they're not going to be able to keep the bands together. The luxury tax payments alone are going to be $200 million. So they've got a closing window. Two more years with the pressure on, and then they're not going to go quietly into the night in 2019, but they're going to have to do some things differently around Steph Curry, possibly Kevin Durant if he's still there. Obviously, Chris Paul to the Rockets, something that we talked about at length. If you didn't hear that episode, it was the longest episode in Locked On Clippers history. I went for, I think, an hour and 10 minutes talking about the trade, everything that went down, pretty much covering all angles of it. So you can check out that episode from last week. Kyle Lowry went back to the Toronto Raptors on a 3-year, $100 million deal. The dude got paid. He got paid. But I think the win for Toronto here is that they know that they're treading water. In a similar situation to where the Clippers were, as one of the better teams in the East, but not contending to take down LeBron. And they've tried in the last couple of years, but they haven't been able to make a move to get past the Cavaliers or get up to their level. So what does Toronto do? They keep Lowry. They stay relevant. 3 years, he's going to make a lot of money. But they don't give him the 5 years. They don't lose him, which would really hurt them right now. They don't give him the 5 years, which would really hurt them long term. And now I think if you're Masai Ujiri running the Toronto Raptors, you've got to try to balance. You can't be trading draft picks and young players for win-now moves, but you can't be totally selling off your roster for future assets either. You do a little bit of what Boston's doing, I think. You win 50 games, but you still develop your youth in second unit, in your D-League system, maybe stash some guys, so that you can keep winning 50 games now, and when Kyle Lowry is done 3 years from now, because 3 years from now, Kyle Lowry probably isn't going to be this team leader level player anymore. You've got guys waiting in the wings. That's the one thing that I think, as much as we make fun of Danny Ainge for not being able to land guys, obviously Paul George going to Oklahoma City, Jimmy Butler going to Minnesota, Gordon Hayward, we don't know if he's going to sign with Boston yet or not, but Danny Ainge, while we can make fun of him for not landing the stars, is still the best combination of good now with great assets of any team in the league. So there's that. Drew Holiday goes back to the New Orleans Pelicans for 5 years and $125 million. They overpaid him, but they didn't have a choice. And so I almost like this move for them, even though it is definitely an overpay, because I said this when they traded for DeMarcus Cousins. They have direction now. That team was floating around 8th, 9th, 10th in the West, not going up, not going down, treading water at slightly below 500 during the Anthony Davis era. They're not wasting the Anthony Davis era anymore. They're taking risks. They're trying to win. First with Cousins, now with Drew Holiday, this big extension. Maybe it would have been more prudent long-term to not give it to him, but they didn't have options to replace him because of their cap situation and having his bird rights. So they did what they had to do. His agent played the leverage beautifully, and now they're going to go try to win some basketball games, get these two guys, Davis and Cousins, to re-sign and keep building. So they still have direction. They're still going in on this group to try to get better. And even though it might not turn out to be the best long-term decision, I admire the, you know, what's the word? I admire that they're really going for it, that they're not being hesitant. Jeff Teague to the Timberwolves on a 3-year, $57 million deal. The Timberwolves traded Ricky Rubio to the Utah Jazz into Utah's cap space. I'm not super wild about this for Minnesota. I'm not sure that Jeff Teague is much better than Ricky Rubio, and I think that paying Jeff Teague $19 million a year is questionable. Now, Jeff Teague, I think, as a whole, has become underrated, but I also think that Ricky Rubio is very underrated. I think Ricky Rubio is a good player. But what I don't quite understand is why Minnesota chose to spend their money this way. I really thought they should have made a strong run at a guy like George Hill. I think every team should be looking at George Hill. I think the Clippers should be looking at George Hill before they overpay an injury-prone, flawed wing. George Hill's a fantastic player. He's a fantastic defender. He fits in a system. He hits open shots. He can play either guard position, in my mind. I think him and Beverly would be a terrific pairing for the Clippers. But so, why, you know, it's very possible that when all is said and done, George Hill signs for less than 3 years, $57 million, and Minnesota could have had him if they hadn't jumped to give this money to Teague so quickly. Patty Mills back to San Antonio for 4 years, $50 million. A lot of people acted like this was some huge bargain. I think that this is like a fair price. Not an overpay. No team jumped and gave Patty Mills $16 million, which would be a bad overpay. But I think this is a solid price because I'm not sold on Mills as a long-term starter. But I think he is a very good reserve. 6, 7, 8 guy on your roster, one of your main rotation pieces. But is he your starting point guard? I'm not sure. So $12.5 million a year, I think, is a fine price. Couple teams keeping their young guys. Yogi Ferrell back to Dallas. Ron Baker back to the Knicks. Michael Carter-Williams took a one-year cheap deal with the Hornets. You know, the Hornets have been looking for pretty much anything to bolster their bench. They had Brian Roberts and Ramon Sessions last year at point guard, who were both awful. So Michael Carter-Williams gives them not only a young guy, but a little bit of a different look with his size and length. Now, he's not particularly good, but he's different, so they're mixing it up a little bit. I don't hate it for the $2.7 million price. Jose Calderon took a minimum deal with the Cavaliers. I like Calderon more than most, I think, but it's curious that the Cavaliers, who you think would have all the leverage with veterans minimum guys, went after him so quickly, because it seems like the Cavaliers should have their pick of the litter at the end of the first or second week of free agency. When all the big money guys are gone, the Cavaliers should be able to get pretty much any min guy they want. So why did they spring so quickly for Calderon when they had other options? I'm not sure. Moving into shooting guards, J.J. Redick, our beloved J.J. Redick, took a one-year, $23 million deal with the 76ers. I think it makes sense for pretty much every party involved. The fit wasn't great for the Clippers to bring him back, even maybe with Chris Paul, but especially without Chris Paul. The Clippers are going to need to spread their ball handling and playmaking duties, and they're going to need to be better defensively. And that's something that you get from moving Austin Rivers into the starting lineup for J.J. So, you know, and I think for him, he was supposedly looking for something like 3 years and $54 million or something like that. 3 years, $56 million. So he takes this deal, and now he's in a position where next summer, when he's a free agent again, he can ask for something like $224, $230, where it's a more reasonable yearly rate. You know, I could see a team next summer, if J.J. has a strong year, giving him $15 million a year for 2 years. But that offer wasn't on the table for him this summer at the price point he was looking for. Kyle Korver took a 3-year, $22 million deal for the Cavs. You know, there's not much to say about that. They're getting one of their guys back. You know, that's about it. Tony Snell got a really nice deal, $46 million for 4 years with the Milwaukee Bucks. I think this is a good price. I think this is a deal that we're going to be looking at in 2 years when there's two more years left saying, man, every team in the league wants that deal. Kind of like how you look at guys like Jay Crowder and Patrick Beverley now. You know, the Clippers actually had the opportunity to get Tony Snell at the trade deadline a year ago for CJ Wilcox in a second-round pick, but Snell's value was so down that the Clippers passed on the deal, which obviously, you know, and that's only going to add fuel to the fire of any anti-Doc people who didn't know that, but that was obviously a mistake. Now Snell's turned into a respectable 3-and-D, 6-7 wing player, which, you know, I don't know if you've heard, but the Clippers could have used one of those. Wayne Selden, back to Memphis, just keeping one of their young guys. Langston Galloway went to the Pistons, 3 years, $21 million. He's a guy who I like. I'm not sure he's a big difference maker, but he's like a lanky, athletic, defensive, downhill guard. He was with the Knicks initially, so that's I saw a little bit of him, you know, living in New York. But I think 3 years, $21 million is a good price. You know, I think when all's said and done, if the Clippers find themselves in a position at the end of the summer where they've got their mid-level exception left, and they're looking for a point guard or a combo guard, they could wish that, man, we should have talked to Langston Galloway early on. But right now, with the Clippers looking to still settle a lot of other things that are going on, you know, as far as looking for a wing first, it makes sense that they weren't ready to make that commitment. Jody Meeks, Wizards, 2 years, $7 million. Good shooter, but injury-prone guy. Not sure how much he has left in the tank. Could end up being a bargain rotation player for them, or could end up being him getting $7 million to do pretty much nothing for a couple years. Ben McLemore, 2 years, $11 million with the Grizzlies. You know, it's funny. I'm not a huge Ben McLemore guy, and Robert Flom from Clips Nation will go on and on about how much Ben McLemore is not an NBA player. But his numbers are decent. He can shoot the ball. Memphis has a unique culture. And I sort of wonder if they can take the talent that's there as far as just scoring the basketball, and if they can make a little grit involved, because it's not like he's, I don't know, I think it's intriguing. I think him in Memphis is intriguing. But Chicago actually got even a better deal, getting Justin Holiday for 2 years and $9 million. Holiday was in Chicago, traded to New York in the Derrick Rose trade, now signing back with Chicago. Solid backup two with size, can shoot the ball. Probably not anything more than like 16 or 18 minutes a game as your backup, but he's going to give you 16 or 18 solid minutes, and he's going to make shots when he's in there. Andre Iguodala, I said, back to the Warriors. Joe Ingles, who the Clippers had a meeting with on Saturday, went back to the Jazz for 4 years and $52 million. He got paid $13 million a year, but again, I think it's a fair price. A lot of people are going, oh, that's too much, that's too much. But you look at what he does. He doesn't score a ton, but he's a big part of what they do distributing the ball. In that playoff series against the Clippers, he was mainly their primary offensive creator, I would say. And he's a good defender. And, you know, I think people doubt it because when he's not actively doing something great defensively, he looks so much like he's not a good defender. He looks like someone you'd play with at the park. You know, he's kind of this awkwardly built white guy, a little slow-footed, balding. He does not look like some athletic specimen, but he's a good defender in the NBA. So I think that's a good value price. I think the restricted free agency may have allowed them to keep him, even though they didn't have to use it. It changed the market that was out there for Ingles. And then PJ Tucker taking a 4-year, $32 million deal with the Rockets. That's one other guy leaving Toronto, but they were going to have to cut some guys loose at least because of their tax position. And he's just a solid player for the Rockets. He's not a great shooter, so maybe he doesn't get too much favor with Mike D'Antoni, but just another good defensive wing that gives them options as they build those different small ball lineups. Paul Millsap, just last night, 3 years, $90 million with the Denver Nuggets. The last year is a team option. I think this is a great move for Denver. They used the money. They used a lot of money, $30 million. But think about it. Who are they using that money on in Denver? Who's going to go there? But you get a guy like Paul Millsap. He's a great mentor and a great complement to their young star, Nikola Jokic. And then 2 years from now, or 3 years from now, depending on how Millsap does and what you do with the team option, when Jokic is starting to get into his... you shed this deal. You've shown that you can be a playoff team with Jokic and Millsap as number two. And now you can go start pitching guys as who's going to come be the new Millsap on the same timeline as Jokic and really make us into a good team. So I like the move. I think there's a long-term path. You know, not that they're guaranteed to contend for anything, but I think they're putting themselves in a position where things could end up going very well for them. Serge Ibaka back to the Raptors, 3 years, $65 million. Not much to say there. I talked about basically what the Raptors are doing with Kyle Lowry. Taj Gibson to Minnesota, 2 years, $28 million. This is going to let Tom Thibodeau do what he wants to do defensively. Taj Gibson's a guy who's a very good defender. And I think these additions that you see, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and Jeff Teague, give them the type of solid two-way veterans with playoff experience that they needed. Because everyone wanted to put the Timberwolves in the playoffs last year. And I was saying, teams, you know, they're not going to jump 20 wins in 1 year. And they didn't. But you don't jump 20 wins from internal growth. You don't jump 20 wins from Towns and Wiggins and Levine are all a year older and a year better now. Oh, and we drafted Chris Dunn. That doesn't get you 20 extra wins. But keeping Wiggins and Towns there and then going out and getting Teague and Butler and Taj Gibson, that might get you 20 wins, or at least it gets you a start. It gets you 12, 15. It gets you in the conversation. But we'll have to see how that group meshes before we can make huge determinations. Amir Johnson, 1 year, $11 million with the 76ers. Similar thing to JJ, they want to get culture guys in the locker room. They want to get culture guys, and I think one thing that's underrated about developing your young guys is you can't throw five players out, you know, five 20-year-olds out on the court and they automatically get better. Like, let's say the Clippers decided to do that. If they were going to totally tank this year and play their young guys, so they put out a lineup of Evans, Thornwell, you know, Decker, Bryce Johnson, and Montrezl Harrell. Okay, great. But as soon as we find out that Juwan Evans isn't good, and I'm not saying he won't be, but we find out Juwan Evans isn't good, then the whole unit falls apart because they don't have a solid point guard to run their offense. But if you look at it and say, hey, we've got some good pieces, let's go get a veteran point guard to keep this thing glued together, what the Nuggets did with Jameer Nelson a few years ago, I think that makes a lot more sense. And that's what Philadelphia is doing. They're saying, we've got some playmakers, let's get a shooter. Let's get J.J. Redick. We've got some big guys, let's get a veteran mentor to help them out defensively. Let's get Amir Johnson. So I like that. David West, going back to the Warriors, you know, again, not too much drama there. Nene re-signing with the Rockets, 3 years, $11 million. I wish I had time to get into the over 38 rule, but, you know, it is what it is. And then Cristiano Felicio going back to the Bulls, 4 years, $32 million. Just keep, you know, a team keeping a young guy. And that's about it. So, wow. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of these other ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come a long way and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I've been using it to try to look at tickets for the Gold Cup in the United States. If you guys watch international soccer, you know that they find the best prices, and everything about it is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. They do all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, though, is that my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, go download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter promo code LOCLIPPERS, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOCLIPPERS today. We're really thankful to have SeatGeek supporting the Locked On Clippers podcast, but also the Locked On network as a whole. So if you're thinking of buying tickets, I'd encourage you to go use that promo code, support your, you know, hopefully your favorite podcast, and check out the app. Okay, guys, so now I'm going to loop you in to about a 12-minute interview that I did with Fox Sports Radio. this was a lot of fun. The guys, Arnie and Chris, are great, even if they're, you know, a little bit of Laker homers. But listen, it was really fun to do. I think it's probably the biggest radio spot I've ever done as far as the show that I've been on, with no offense to my good friend Jeff Bloom, who hosts me a lot over at 1080 Clippers Talk out in the Coachella Valley. But I think this is probably the highest profile show I've ever done. It was a fun interview. Just one note before I patch it in. I'm not an expert sound mixer. I normally like to just record my podcasts in one take. So editing in audio is not like my deal by any means. I think it's going to be louder. I think the clip that I'm going to play is going to be louder than me talking. So if you've got your headphones in and you've got the volume turned up, because I know sometimes I talk quietly, just be, you know, turn it down a little bit before the start so I don't blow your eardrums out, okay, and then readjust. But so here it goes. This is me on with Arnie and Chris from Fox Sports Radio. It was a blast, and then we'll chat again after and talk a little bit more about Clipper stuff and what they're going to do going forward.
I will say, the best laugh I have tonight as we hit up the Geico Fox Sports Celebrity Hotline. Lucas, I checked out your Twitter feed, and whenever your headline is Clips Have No Cap Room, I legit started laughing out loud. So, with that in mind, Lucas Jahan joins us. He covers the Clippers like no one else. Were you surprised to see it be Blake staying and Chris Paul moving on? Did that shock you at all?
No, it didn't shock me. I think if I'd had the opportunity to predict it before the summer began, I would have guessed that the Clippers would keep both, but it didn't shock me to find out that one had left. And it definitely didn't shock me that after Chris Paul left, Blake Griffin still came back.
Tell me what's going on with Doc, because what, a year ago they were locking themselves in the house and they didn't want the Andre Jordan to leave, and it was a big laugh and all that stuff. Now it's like, oh, I don't like Doc Rivers and blah, 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 and his son this, and how bad did it get? What about the animosity here? How come we didn't hear that during the course of the year? What's going on there?
You didn't hear it during the course of the year because someone made it up, or at the very least someone blew it totally out of proportion. You look at where it came from. It came from a guy who had to post it on his Facebook page because he couldn't even get it vetted by his own outlet to actually publish it. Wow. He had to post it on Facebook.
Wow. Wow. So there is no animosity then with Doc and Chris Paul then, is what you're saying?
Well, look, anytime you've got people working together, I mean, I just heard you guys bickering a couple seconds ago, right, about Paul Millsap. Sure, there's tension, especially the Clippers, the amount of pressure that they've had over the last 6 years. They keep on coming up short in the playoffs. We all know that. There's tension, absolutely. But did Chris Paul leave because he hates Doc Rivers? No, he left because the Clippers weren't being super successful. They weren't going to offer him the full maximum contract, and he felt like he had a better chance to both get paid and win in Houston. It had nothing to do with not feeling like he could stand to be around Doc Rivers one more second.
Hey, Lucas, I'm curious. Why, do you not agree with him, Arnie? I mean, I'm buying it right now.
It was just the way he said kids said I'd rather be with him one more second.
I'm buying it. I mean, absolutely. And here's why, too. Because this is my question. Is this a matter? I mean, and again, Lucas, there's so much BS out there. It's hard to cut through what's legit and what is, and what's a story that's been, you know, planted by somebody, and what's a story that's really happening. You hear a lot, well, the Clippers chose Blake over Chris Paul. That's not really what happened here, is it?
No, I think that kind of like saying that Chris Paul left because of Doc Rivers, I think saying the Clippers chose Blake over Chris is an oversimplification. The Clippers wanted both back, but I think when push came to shove, they were more willing to give Blake Griffin a five-year contract than Chris Paul. But if Chris Paul had taken a four-year contract, which is what the Clippers put on the table, he would have been back. The Clippers were willing to give him a four-year max. They were just worried about year five. And to be honest, they're worried about year five with Blake Griffin, too. Initially, they came to Blake with a four-year offer, but Blake kind of sat around and waited, and the Clippers folded and gave him the fifth year. We don't know exactly how the process went with Chris, but it's possible, you know, from my perspective, that they could have offered him 4 years, and Chris could have just said, no, I'm done. If you don't value, you know, a player of Chris Paul's caliber doesn't really negotiate in the sports world.
Let's get back to Blake for a second. Let me ask you this. He gets the 5-year $176 million. Oklahoma City, how much could they have given him? Was there a chance that he was really going to go to OKC, or did he have to get a 4-year offer from the Clippers to push him toward OKC?
Well, so his deal with the Clippers is going to pay him something like 5 years, $172 million.
Okay.
And the most another team could have offered him would have been like 4 years, $129 million, $130 million. So, you know, Oklahoma City, I never heard anything that they were even in the hunt. When
Wow.
you look at their salary cap situation, they don't have room to sign free agents. They had to trade for Paul George. But I know that he was, you know, however much his interest was, I don't know, but he at least was in contact with Phoenix and Denver, and there were some links between him and Miami as well. All three of those teams, as we've seen, have the money to go after a star free agent. Oklahoma City didn't have the money, so I'm not sure exactly where that link came from, but I don't think it was substantial at any point.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it was. It was a bunch of people who, because Blake grew up here and played his
college
ball at Oklahoma, automatically thought, oh, well, he's going to want to come here, when they boot his ass like crazy every time he played here. But, you know, I'm with
you.
Well,
that's the Westbrook Lakers thing, right? You hear that, Russell Westbrook. Oh, he's from L.A.
Yeah, like they boo him.
Well, wait a minute. We were just talking about that. I go, if Lonzo Ball plays really well and he looks really good, why wouldn't Russell Westbrook and Paul George leave after a year and go to L.A.? Tell me tell me about that one. What do you think?
Well, it's certainly plausible, but I think that for about 5 years, a lot of people have been taking it for granted, which is what's humorous.
Right, okay.
I do like
you the understand fact what I'm saying?
No, yeah, I understand. I think it all depends on how good Lonzo is. If Lonzo turns into the next Magic Johnson, they'll be lined up around the block to go to Los Angeles.
Factor there would be Lonzo, not that he's going back home.
Right.
I did have to laugh, though, because we've got a Clippers guy on Talking Clippers, and Arnie's got to take it back to the purple and gold, Arnie. It's the disrespect. So Gallinari obviously having a meeting right now. Are you of the opinion, and I know by the Twitter bio there's not a lot of cap room, if any, Lucas left, but what do you see him doing? I mean, how can they help to build up the wings? How can they help to get a little bit of guard help? I mean, Patrick Beverley is going to bring a little attitude. I mean, I kind of like that side of it, but I mean, what are you thinking is next here for the Clip?
Well, they're going to keep going after wings. You know, they were trying to get in the Andre Iguodala race, but they never really got that involved in it. They talked with Joe Ingles, who's since gone back to Utah. They've talked with Jonathan Simmons, who's still a restricted free agent from the Spurs. Now they have this meeting with Gallinari. They've got a meeting coming up with Rudy Gay. So I think that their main goal, you know, for the last couple of years, they've had Luke Mbamute at small forward. And while he was a fine fit for the team that they had, in a world without Chris Paul, you need more offensive capabilities from every single player on the floor. So it's harder to find big minutes for a guy like Luke Mbamute, who really doesn't help on offense. So they're looking for a wing that can help on both ends of the floor. And the way that they get that wing, because as you noted, there's not a lot of cap room, is probably through a sign-and-trade deal, sending out some salaries to bring back a player. I've heard that potentially for Gallinari, the Clippers are looking at $20 million a year in that range. And so for that, they'd absolutely have to work out some sort of trade, maybe sending out Jamal Crawford and Wesley Johnson or some grouping of contracts like that.
Look, I don't mean to pry, but I guess I have to ask because it's been in the news. Do you have an athletic bone in your body? Because I don't know how you're going to cover Lou Williams if you have no athletic bone in your body. Is he talking about you? What's going on? How are you going to cover this guy with that attitude?
Well, you know, I did play some ball in high school, but I don't know if that counts by the NBA standards. But you know what? I like to focus on the salary cap stuff, so I don't think I need to worry about having athletic bones for that.
No, but I mean, does it bother? Because he seems like he's going to give attitude to the media once he gets out there. I don't know who he was talking. Obviously, somebody was giving him grief, but I could see him full attitude once he gets out there.
Yeah, that was interesting. I'm not sure that's the best look, but.
Is there any concern? Final thought for me, Lucas, and we'll let you run and get back to your weekend. We really appreciate your time tonight. But is there any concern now about the dynamic going forward. And I know there's a lot of things that we really can't quantify, and it is July, so we have a lot of time. But is there concern about another leader stepping up, or maybe someone kind of taking the reins here now that Chris Paul has moved on? What's that dynamic like right now?
Well, you know, Chris Paul, while he was a leader, he's not necessarily the most popular guy on the teams that he's played on. Kind of in a way that Kobe Bryant was never super popular among his teammates, even though he was a leader. So I'm not sure that you miss. I mean, you miss Chris Paul, but
right.
In the sense of him being sort of that rallying force in the locker room that everyone, you know, wants to basically go play for, I don't know that he was necessarily that guy, because the way that he grinds on his teammates, you notice these, you know, so-called feuds we keep hearing about. First it was DeAndre and Chris, then it was Austin and Chris. We've heard Blake and Chris so many times over the years. It's always someone and Chris. But to answer your question on who's stepping up, we saw Patrick Beverley from the day the trade was announced talking about how we're here to win, we're here to compete. He was in Blake Griffin's meeting 2 days after he got traded to the Clippers. He was in the meeting with Blake Griffin telling him, you're going to stay here and we're going to do something. So is Patrick Beverley Chris Paul on the basketball court? No, of course not. No one is. But I think maybe in the locker room, he steps in as a veteran voice who has been successful the last several years in Houston and is ready to still be successful here in Los Angeles.
Hey, Lucas, appreciate my work on that game. Otherwise, Lou's going to get on you. So say, hey, Lou, I've got a three-point shot. Let's play one-on-one. So good luck on dealing with him. That should be fun.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see. Good stuff. Breaking down what was, I guess, a little bit of a surprise to kick off the free agency week. The Chris Paul move and then the re-upping with Blake Griffin. Thanks to Lucas Hahn for joining us at Lucas J. Hahn on Twitter. He runs the website ClipsNation.com. And as you heard, good insight, good information, salary cap guy, kind of keeps things in line. How about you, Arnie? Were you surprised to see the deal that Blake got? Did you think he was going somewhere else?
I thought it was 5 year, 176, 172. I thought he was gone. First of all, I didn't think he'd want to come back to the Clippers. Two, that's a lot of dinero. I can see why. I think he gets an extra, $42 million by going back to the Clippers. So maybe it had a lot to do with about money. And I guess I was one of the foolish people that thought that he was going to end up in OKC. I'm one of those dreamers out there. But that's a lot of dough. For a guy that's, let's be honest, he missed a lot of games and, he has some limitations. That's just a lot of money for a guy like that.
Okay, guys, so I hope you enjoyed that little bit of me with Arnie and Chris doing that spot on Fox Sports Radio. It's always fun for me to do radio shows. I do them intermittently. You know, sometimes I'll go months without doing one, and then going into the playoffs, I get a bunch of requests around free agency time when the Clippers make moves. I get requests, so, you know, you follow along on Twitter. Sometimes I go ahead and put it on Clips Nation if I'm going to be doing a show, sometimes not. It depends a little bit on how busy I am, but I don't think I've ever done a radio spot without tweeting out a link for everyone to listen live on the internet. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can see those links when they come and go. But if you're, you know, at the beginning of that segment, if you remember, he pointed out that my Twitter username I've changed in the last couple of days to Clips Have No Cap Room. It used to be Lucas Hahn, and now it's Clips Have No Cap Room. And the reason I changed it to that is because I get a lot of questions from Clippers fans like you, and I enjoy it. I enjoy the dialogue with Clippers fans. You know, I love it. It means a lot to me, actually, especially to have people who, you know, value my opinion and what I have to say. It's especially meaningful to me. But I do tend to get the same questions over and over and over again. And so I did change my Twitter name to that, to Clips Have No Cap Room, because I think it was some point Saturday evening, and I'd gotten the question, now that we've signed Blake, how much cap room do we have? I think 30 times. I think I got the question 30 times from 30 different people. Now that we've signed Blake, how much cap room do the Clippers have? And I can only type 0 so many times before the key falls off of my keyboard, and then I've, you know, got to go get a new laptop and all that. So I decided to change my username, Clips Have No Cap Room, and I started joking around, you know, that I should start charging 10 cents a tweet. You want to ask me a salary cap question? 10 cents. And, you know, obviously it's not like 10 cents is a huge deal, so it's not like I was being serious, but I've had a couple people just in jest Venmo me 10 cents after they have asked me a question on Twitter. And beyond that, I've actually had a handful of people who, you know, in a really humbling and generous way for me, have supported my work, you know, monetarily, not in like some sort of humongous way, but by going to my Patreon page and making a monthly pledge of even a couple dollars. It makes a difference. If, you know, if everyone who listened to this show paid $1 a month, I would make 10 times more than I do. And I understand not everyone is going to do that, and I put this content out there for free because I enjoy making it, but maybe it's something to think about. You know, you subscribe to Sports Illustrated and you pay a certain amount to get every edition of that. You know what, if you are willing to contribute to this content and make it something that is feasible for me to continue doing long term, then I would absolutely really appreciate that. And if you don't, I understand. I don't need an explanation or anything from anyone. And I've actually had this Patreon account set up for quite a while, and I try not to really plug it very much because I don't want to be asking for money. But, you know, I've had some generosity over the last several days, both on Patreon and some people Venmoing me, you know, 10 cents for a tweet, I figured, you know, this is maybe an opportunity to remind some people and just say, you know, if you have a chance or you have the capability to help and support the content, then it would be greatly appreciated. And maybe even, you know, you guys really don't like the microphone that I use, so maybe even at a certain point we could put some of that money into buying a little bit nicer of a microphone to record the Locked On Clippers podcast. But don't want to talk any more about that. Let's get into the Clippers free agency situation. They've got Blake Griffin back. They're going hard after Danilo Gallinari. We don't know exactly what the situation is there. They wanted Iguodala. They didn't even get a meeting with him. He's back with Golden State. They had a meeting with Joe Ingles. He's back with Utah. They had a meeting with Jonathan Simmons, who's still a free agent, but he's restricted for San Antonio, and I highly doubt that the Clippers are going to throw enough money at him to make San Antonio not match an offer sheet, so I basically consider him out of the equation. And then the Clippers met with Rudy Gay last night as well, both Gallinari and Gay in Los Angeles. And those guys could come at drastically different price points. Gallinari, potentially, we've heard that teams like Boston and Miami, if they miss out on Gordon Hayward, could come with a big payday for Gallinari. I don't think anyone's coming at Rudy Gay like that. So maybe if Gallinari does go to one of those teams really opening up their checkbooks, maybe the Clippers pursue Rudy Gay at the small forward position. But so let's talk a little bit about what's going on. Danilo Gallinari, reportedly going into free agency, talked about wanting a four-year, $100 million contract, so $25 million a year. It is, I think, at this point, apparent that he is not getting that. But there's nothing wrong with asking, right? But I think maybe the price range for his services is probably more in the $16 to $18 million range. I think that a four-year, $64 million deal, which would pay him $16 million per, would probably be a competitive offer, but he would get offered more money. I think that the Clippers, who aren't trying to add the super long-term salary to their books, could be offering him like a two-year deal with a team option, but then boosting up the money to like 20 or 21 million a year to sort of entice him, and then that would leave them with the flexibility in 2019. As I talked about, the Warriors are gonna have trouble keeping the gang together. Klay Thompson is Jerry West's boy. Like, if Jerry West had like a pet favorite player on the Warriors that was his when he was helping them run the team, it was Klay Thompson. So maybe that's what the Clippers are angling for, is to try to get someone like Gallinari for 2 years, then decline that option slash cut that non-guaranteed salary and really pursue Klay in 2019. That really would not surprise me a ton. But that's the price tag that I think you're looking at. I think you're looking at, especially if you want him to take that short-term deal, $20 million. And even then, he might go to Boston or Miami or even back to Denver. Rudy Gay, I think you're looking at an entirely different price point. Rudy Gay might take a one-year mid-level exception deal or 1 year then a player option mid-level exception deal to try to rebuild his value, because he's looked around the league and it doesn't seem like anyone is really stepping up to pay him. Maybe he should have opted into Sacramento and gone back for 1 year, but I think he wanted to get away from that organization. They certainly, while I think they've had a very good last few months, the organizational culture is not great there. I think it was probably better for both sides that they parted ways. But I'm not wild about Rudy Gay, not wild about him as a basketball player, and I'm especially not wild about him coming off of an Achilles injury, and I'm especially not wild about the idea that you're giving him a one-year deal and then he's going to bolt and you're not even adding a building block. So what's the point if he's not a great player? He's not going to stick around. Danilo Gallinari is a different issue because I think he's a significantly better basketball player than Rudy Gay, and while he's not coming off that Achilles injury, he's had injury problems forever. We think Blake has had problems. Blake has averaged, I think, 58 games a season over the last 7 years. Was it 58? I think it was a little more than that. I think it might have been 68. I did it on my phone earlier. I forget. I wish I remembered. But Gallinari, this is the punchline. Gallinari, 50 games a year. He misses 30 games a year. And that's not, you know, a lot of people are throwing these numbers around how many games Blake Griffin has missed in the last three seasons, because we all know he had that bad year, the quad, the equipment manager, and the broken hand, and he missed almost the whole season. And then the other 2 years, he's been in the 60s, which, he played 67 of 82 games last year. That's really not that bad. It's not great, but it's not that bad. But for Gallinari to be averaging 50 games a year over a 7-year time span, the dude is gonna miss 25 games if you sign him. And that's a problem. You know, I don't know how any team can look at him and say that it's not a problem. And with what he brings to the table, 18, 20 points a game potentially, really efficient scorer, dead eye shooter, can play both forward positions, he might be getting a max deal if he didn't have these health issues. So maybe you gamble that he can stay healthy, but, you know, that's a huge risk, I think. Again, if you get him on that shorter-term deal, the risk is mitigated. But you kind of have to wonder, and I've wondered the last couple days, if the Clippers wouldn't be better off going after cheaper guys who have some upside and not kind of spending their whole allowance as soon as they can. Like, you know, they say you shouldn't buy the first house you see. Maybe you shouldn't overpay the first small forward you meet with. And, you know, they had the Gallinari meeting like fourth or something, but maybe they shouldn't overpay this first guy that they're super interested in. Maybe they should wait, see what comes up at the trade deadline, see what comes up next summer. You know, be patient. You've got Blake Griffin for 5 years now. You don't want to wait until year four to start building a team around him, but you also don't want to do what Portland did, because last summer, Portland was so eager to keep taking steps forward around Damian Lillard that they spent all their money. They didn't go anywhere. And now they're probably not going to be able to make changes to that roster for the rest of Damian Lillard's contract. So they basically wasted 5 years of Damian Lillard's prime because they were so eager to add help in year one. So you've got Blake Griffin for the next 5 years. Don't waste years 2, 3, 4 because you're super eager to add help in year one. That's what I would say. Now, I would also say guys you can target, like a guy like Omri Caspi, who does a lot of the things that Gallinari does, and no, he's not as good as Gallinari, but he's a very good shooter. He can play both forward positions. You know, he's probably not as overall skilled or crafty offensively, but you bring him in, he can score 15 points a game if you're giving him enough minutes and shots. He can shoot 40% from three. And he's at a cheap price where you could lock him in, and potentially, if he breaks out, he could be a, you know, core piece, not Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan level core, but like Patrick Beverley level, where you love that Beverley deal that he's only due $5.5 million this year and $5 million next year. You would love to have a guy like Omri Caspi, if he breaks out, potentially do only $5 or $6 or $7 million a year going forward. Those are where you get the long-term steel rotation players, not by overpaying a guy like Danilo Gallinari. And it's not because I don't like Gallinari, because like I said, Gallinari is such a good basketball player, and I'm sure that the Clippers would get 50 glorious games. And while the defensive fit is questionable, I think offensively, the different lineups the Clippers could roll out with Gallinari, Griffin, and Jordan, small ball lineups, big lineups, spacing the floor, fantastic. But you're going to get 50 games of it, and it might not put you over the top, and it limits your ability to make big moves down the line because you're paying this guy so much. A guy like Omri Caspi, and he's just an example, gives you a little more flexibility. I think a guy like Shabazz Muhammad, who was made an unrestricted free agent by Minnesota over the weekend. Shabazz Muhammad, I don't, you know, personally, I don't think he's as good as Omri Caspi, but similar role, a guy who can come in and score at a cheaper price, and if he blossoms, you could potentially have the long-term steal. But what I also think the Clippers, you know, maybe this is a little outside the box from what, you know, we haven't heard them be interested in this at all, but if they're willing to make this big sign-and-trade, dump salaries on a third team with a pick probably to make the team accept it, and then send a pick back to Denver to make them willing to facilitate the deal. Now, we're probably talking to Denver, the 2020 Cleveland second that the Clippers got for CJ Wilcox a year ago, and to a third team, the 2018 Houston first that the Clippers got just last week for Chris Paul. So you're giving up a late first rounder and a late second rounder, or I guess we don't really know what Cleveland will be in 2020, but so you're giving up a late first rounder, a distant future second rounder, and you're moving Jamal Crawford and Wesley Johnson most likely to make this sign and trade work. You're working hard for it. Now, I think it's really doable. If Gallinari committed to the Clippers, I have a hard time imagining that the exact thing that I just laid out, give Denver that second and a late first round pick for the salaries, I would imagine that you would have several potential third teams interested in that deal. And I can't imagine Denver would say no to a free second round pick when they might not even want Gallinari back at that price point anyway. But so if you're willing to do all that for Danilo Gallinari, hear me out. Do it for George Hill. I mean, George Hill is a better basketball player than Danilo Gallinari. And yeah, he's a little older, and position-wise, it puts you in a little more of an awkward position. But George Hill is incredibly good. And he missed some time last year in Utah. But over the course of his 9-year career, he's played 74 or more games 6 of the 9 years. And one of the years that he didn't was the lockout year when there were only 66 games. So we'll say, not including the lockout year, 6 of 8 years, he's played 74 or more games. Danilo Gallinari, those 8 years, again, we'll take the lockout year out altogether, he's played 74 or more games once, and it was his second season. So it's different. It's a different level of long-term durability between these two guys. But with George Hill, what you get a really good shooter, a really good defender, a really great system guy, and a guy who has been a point guard for most of his career, and he helps you out in the playmaking department now that you're moving from Chris Paul to Patrick Beverley. Now, George Hill is not normally a full-time shooting guard. And whenever I bring this up, I hear backlash from people. The backcourt is going to be too small. This is a problem we had. 6-foot Chris Paul, 6'3 JJ Redick. It didn't work. But here's the difference. 6-foot Chris Paul had a 6'4 wingspan. And 6'3 JJ Redick had a 6'3 wingspan. Now, Chris Paul obviously has a reputation as a tremendous defender. All-NBA first team, great. J.J. Redick, meh. He had his moments as a defender as a Clipper. I actually think he's underrated as a defender. But we definitely saw, especially this past season, that he struggled. But so those wingspans, you've got 6 foot with a 6'4 wingspan, 6'3 with a 6'3 wingspan. Patrick Beverley is 6'1 with a 6'7 wingspan. And George Hill is 6'3 with a 6'9 wingspan. So even though the height is almost identical, the actual size and length that you're getting, you ever hear someone say you have to play big? Someone could be 7'2", but they don't play big, and someone who's 6'8 can dominate them. Similarly, someone who's 6'4 could dominate someone who's 6'8 if they play big. Well, you've got a 6'1 and a 6'3 guy here in Beverly and Hill who have tremendous wingspans and play big. They play big, tough defense, and they would annihilate opposing backcourts on the defensive end of the floor. George Hill is such a tremendous defender. Patrick Beverly is such a tremendous, energetic, hard-nosed defender. That pairing would be great. And then you have to make a move for a small forward. But you use this big sign-and-trade that you're willing to do. Do that for George Hill instead of Danilo Gallinari. Because George Hill, I think, is a foundational piece. George Hill is your third best player, and he's going to be around for most of the season. Danilo Gallinari, I'm not as impressed by. I would rather build around George Hill than Danilo Gallinari. And you make a deal for a small forward. You make an Austin Rivers trade. You go after a guy like Wilson Chandler from Denver, Damari Carroll. You might even get a draft pick from Toronto for taking Damari Carroll back. Depending on how Boston does in free agency, they might be willing to move Jay Crowder's salary. Now, you'd have to give something up to Boston for that, but Jay Crowder is a very good basketball player. You can go out and get guys, or you can even, sign a cheap guy, like I said, a cheap guy like Omri Caspi, and have him and Sam Dekker be that tandem at small forward. But I like the idea of Beverly Hill, ? At small forward, Griffin Jordan, way better than I like the idea of Beverly, Rivers, Gallinari, Griffin Jordan. So I wish that was something that the Clippers would pursue. Moving past this big splash, whatever it's going to be, the Clippers have a couple other needs, and they've had a couple other names be linked to them. They're probably going to need a backup point guard at some point. Right now, they've got four guards, Beverly and Rivers, presumably the starters, Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford, presumably the backups. But Lou Williams, despite his size at 6'1", is not... He's a point guard just like Jamal Crawford is a point guard, where they can dribble the ball, yes. So, yeah, you could put him at point guard in a pinch. But you want to put them there 20 minutes a game, 82 games a season, you're going to struggle. And then Lou Williams is very much like Jamal Crawford in a lot of ways. And so you start putting both of those guys out on the court together for extended minutes, extended periods of time. Your backcourt second unit defense is going to be horrible, and your shot selection is going to be horrible. So, I don't imagine that anyone is thinking, yeah, this would be a good idea to go into the season with these two guys as our backup guards. So the Clippers probably need a backup point guard eventually. Maybe they use the mid-level exception there, in which case they could go after a guy like Darren Collison, because $8 million is, a lot of money to go potentially get a good backup point guard. For the minimum, they could just go after, they could try to keep a guy cheaper. They could try to keep Raymond Felton, who I thought was perfectly solid in that role. Although, I think with Patrick Beverley, you might need a little more of a partner at point guard than compared to a guy like Chris Paul. You needed a backup. A real backup who is going to know his role. Patrick Beverley, I think you need a partner. I think you need to be more willing to say, we're kind of going to split minutes. Beverly's going to play more, but it might be closer to like 28-20, 30-18. And on some nights, if Bev's having a bad night, the backup, Collison might play even more. Whereas Chris Paul is like, it was always going to be Chris Paul for as many minutes as he was willing to play or, was good for him to play to stay rested. But, I mean, that's another area, not to harp on my pet idea that's never going to happen too much, but George Hill helps you there because when Patrick Beverley goes out, George Hill is a starting caliber NBA point guard. So you have two starting caliber NBA point guards in your starting lineup. You get a backup, sure, you know, you get someone for depth of the position, but you don't have to sweat it as much when you have those two guys on the floor together. And looking at model teams like Utah and San Antonio, who, you know, people have said to me, the Clippers can't have Patrick Beverley be their starting point guard because he only averages like 4 or 5 assists, and Chris Paul averaged 9. And I said, yeah, but JJ Redick and Luka Mbamute really didn't do anything as far as assists go. They didn't do offensive creation. But you look at teams like San Antonio, where they've got Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard, Patty Mills off the bench, all doing some creation. No one on the team averaging more than 4.5 assists. You look at a team like Utah, no one on the team averaging more than 4.5 assists, but you've got Ingles, Diaw, Hayward, Hill, a bunch of guys that are capable and willing of making good passes to open players. That's the type of team the Clippers are going to be. Beverley is a more than capable passer. Yeah, I mean, he did average 5 assists a game, or 4, but he'll probably average 5 assists a game as the Clippers point guard. Austin Rivers is a capable passer, even though I don't think he's a pure point guard. He's definitely a capable passer from the shooting guard position's perspective. Blake Griffin is a very good distributor. You replace Luka Mbamute with someone at small forward who is more offensively capable, even if they aren't a true creator, and you've kind of made up for it. I think if you have George Hill and Patrick Beverley, neither of them is as good of a distributor as Chris Paul, but the two of them together are probably a better creative combo than Chris Paul and J.J. Redick, because Redick really never did much with the ball in his hands. The other need that the Clippers probably are going to end up having is another veteran big man. And I know this doesn't make people super happy when I say this, because they say it should be Bryce and Harrell, backup power forward, backup center. Those should be the guys. They should be getting minutes. We don't need another veteran. But the Clippers need another veteran. They're going to go get one. Because you can't go into a season with, you know, and this is just how I feel, and I know some people disagree with me, but I said the same thing last year. You can't go into the season with Bryce Johnson needing to play, because then what if he's not ready? What if Bryce Johnson isn't ready, and you don't sign a veteran, and you throw him headfirst into the fire, and he just burns up, and that's it. That he's done. His confidence is toast. Doc Rivers probably moves on. He has to sign some 10-day guys. You do yourself a favor by signing a player like Brandon Bass. Because Brandon Bass is not spectacular, but he's solid. And Bryce Johnson, if he plays well and energetic, and you know, he's a young guy, he's athletic, if he plays well, he can make some mistakes, but still deserve minutes over Brandon Bass. But it gives him an opportunity. If he really can't pick up the defensive systems and he's struggling, and he's just going to drag the team down all year in that rotation spot, it gives him the opportunity to take a back seat and learn a little more. Now, if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, and you're going to be horrible anyway, throw your guys into the fire. That's great. But the Clippers are in a different boat. I don't think they need to throw their guys in the fire, but I also am hesitant about them signing a guy like Zach Randolph, who they're very interested in, because I think Zach Randolph demands minutes as a third big. I think it's fairly easy to bench Brandon Bass for Bryce Johnson if Bryce Johnson is doing well in practice and you want to see him get some chances. I think it's a lot harder to bench a guy like Zach Randolph, and I worry that Zach Randolph would even cut into Montrezl Harrell's minutes. And while Harrell isn't great, he was a solid big in 18 minutes of the game for Houston last year. I see no reason why he shouldn't be penciled into the Clippers rotation for opening night. That's just my thought on the whole Zach Randolph thing. I worry that, and I'm the guy who says, get another veteran, don't pencil the young guy in for playing time. I think that Zach Randolph does more than give you another option. I think he blocks out Bryce Johnson. It would be one thing if the Clippers had re-signed Chris Paul, if they made the Western Conference Finals last year, lost to Golden State in 6 games, and they're saying, we need to make a couple tweaks, but man, we are right there. Then yeah, go get the 35-year-old guy, sit the 24-year-old, and try to take that next little step that you need. But this Clippers team, post-Chris Paul, you're looking at 6, 7, 8 in the playoffs, probably. you're not a super championship contender. Or if you become one, it's going to be because you have a magical run where the team comes together to be greater than the sum of its parts. And that's all great. But if you're going to go on a magical run, why not do it with Bryce Johnson and Brandon Bass instead of Zach Randolph? It's not going to make a huge difference who's in that spot. So you give yourself Brandon Bass because you're trying to make the playoffs, and you don't want Bryce Johnson, if he really isn't ready, to tank your team for 12 minutes a game. But I also think that unless you're going to be a real contender, it's a mistake to bring in a guy like Zach Randolph who's going to give your young players no opportunity at all to play. And then one other thing I want to mention as we close out this very extended episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast that is reaching the epic lengths of last week's episode regarding the Chris Paul trade, there is a rumor that former Clipper Cole Aldrich is back on the market. He has 2 years left on his deal, $7.3 million this year, a little under $7 million next year, but only $2 million of that is guaranteed. Minnesota, because of all the moves that they're trying to make, is reportedly willing to part with a 2018 first-round pick for Cole Aldrich. If you're willing to take Cole Aldrich's salary from them to help them get their free agents, they will give you a 2018 first-round pick. Now, the pick that's involved is Oklahoma City's, actually, and it's lottery-protected, but Oklahoma City's going to be good. But think about this. The Clippers have a $7.3 million trade exception from the Chris Paul trade. There aren't very many good players in the NBA that make $7.3 million or less, except for the players on rookie deals. Now, there are a couple, but it's probably like Jay Crowder and Patrick Beverley. I'm not really sure if there's anyone else out there who's not on a rookie deal who's a difference maker at under $7 million. And those guys are so valuable because of the contracts that they're on that I don't see you getting them in a trade exception. You know, trade exceptions are useful if you have a $12 million trade exception. You could take back Channing Frye like the Cavaliers did a couple years ago. Channing Frye, solid rotation player, overpaid by his old team. You can absorb his contract, wonderful. I don't know that there's going to be opportunities like that for the Clippers this year. But if you do this deal for Cole Aldrich, you get a first-round pick, and now you're looking at between the Clippers, the Rockets, and the Thunder, you've got three first-round picks. And it doesn't matter that none of them are likely to be particularly good. They might be picks 20, 24, and 28 in the draft. But with 20, 24, and 28, you've got options. You can package them and move up. You can potentially trade one is sweetener in this deal and one is sweetener in that other deal and still have a first-round pick to add a rookie next year. You've got a lot of options if you make that trade. So I think that's something that the Clippers can't jump on it right now because they're trying to make a sign-and-trade deal, and if they acquire a player using a sign-and-trade, triggers the hard cap, and they're trying to use the full mid-level exception. You use the full mid-level exception, triggers the hard cap. So you can't take on $7.3 million in salary for Cole Aldrich until you know what your other moves are going to be. But once you find out what your other moves are going to be, say Gallinari for $20 million, use the full MLE, you can take back that Cole Aldrich money, you can fill out your roster with minimum deals, and you'll be fine under the hard cap, and you get a free first-round pick for it. Depending on what happens with everything else that's going on as the Clippers are building this team, they might not be able to take that $7.3 million back and still fit under the hard cap. So you can't jump on it immediately, but I think it's really something that should be in the back of their heads as they make these moves in the coming days. Once the dust is settled, can we get this done to get this free first-round pick? Because with their trade exception and with Cole Aldrich's prior success in LA, it's almost a perfect match, I think. So that's going to do it for our mega-long free agency weekend. You know, opening weekend of free agency summary Locked On Clippers podcast. Thank you guys for listening. If you have already listened all the way through this point, please consider what I talked about with the Patreon page, supporting the podcast. If you can't support in that way, please go on iTunes and leave a good review. It matters a lot to potential advertisers. You know, and by the way, like I said last time, leave a free agent target that you want me to talk about. I check the reviews. I see the new ones. I talked about Iguodala last week because someone left a five-star review saying They wanted the Clippers to go after Iguodala. So leave a 5-star review. Tell me who you want the Clippers to go after. And I'll talk about them in the next episode. Also, you know, to the two people who have supported the Patreon page so far, I sent you guys messages. I don't know if you got them. Maybe you have to check your Patreon account to see the message if you don't get an email for it. But be sure to go check that because I sent you guys messages. As always, comments, questions, feedback, lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com, at Lucas J. Han on Twitter, the Clips Nation blog where we are, and I mean all over every single bit of Clippers news and possible rumors and speculation and hypotheticals and all the good stuff, including Summer League coverage coming up, clipsnation.com, at clipsnationsbn on Twitter. Thank you for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.